This episode is brought to you by Set for Life Insurance. Protect yourself against life setbacks with Set for Life Insurance. Set for Life Insurance gets you disability and life insurance at a reduced cost with their exclusive discounts. Now that's why I use them. Visit www.setforlifeinsurance.com and tell them Dr. Darko sent you.
Welcome to Doc's Outside the Box Podcast. This is your official show, looking inside the minds of cutting-edge and innovative doctors. Think you'll find these stories in any medical textbook? Sorry. You're getting real-life insight from men and women pushing the envelope beyond medicine. Ordinary doctors doing extraordinary things. Let's start now with your host, Dr. Nee Darko.
Hey docs, are you looking to learn how to become a physician leader? Then Physician CEO is for you. Physician CEO is an accelerated business immersion program designed for physicians and developed by MBA faculty from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. So learn more at www.physician-ceo.com/DOTB.
What's good? What's up? How y'all doing? Thanks for joining me on another episode of Docs Outside the Box. Really excited that you all are here. Just want to let y'all know that my voice, me in general, I'm just under the weather. I caught a cold. I don't know if I got it from my son or vice versa. Either way, I'm a little bit under the weather, and obviously my voice is going to sound a little bit nasally, but I hope y'all forgive me. This is still going to be a great episode. And just shout out to everyone who downloaded episode 76 with Dr. Taylor Branagh. He is the host of the Happy Doc podcast and just kind of was continuing the series of just interviewing some doctors who are doing some really great things on the podcast scene. And apparently y'all really liked that episode. We got a ton of downloads from that. So I definitely encourage you all to go back and re-listen. Or if you have not listened to that episode, go back and click on episode 76 with Dr. Taylor Brandon. I'm telling you, I think you're going to really enjoy that one. I loved his energy, you know, his positivity. It's very infectious. And I think overall, he's going to leave the medical community a better place. And also, once you finish listening to it, share it with others, as well as reach out to me through Instagram or Instagram stories or even Twitter. Let me know what you thought of that one. Now, on this episode, we're going to take a little bit of a pivot. We're not going to do a physician podcast, but we're going to do one of the original OGs of Living Outside the Box. I have Dr. Heidi Mawad. She is a neurologist by training, but currently right now she is a medical writer. She is an editor. She also writes content for websites, and she wrote a book called Careers Beyond Clinical Medicine. Now, she wrote this book back in 2013, and this book is a book about giving doctors examples and concrete steps on how to transition or even pursue alternative careers. You can find that right now on Amazon, and the link will be in the show notes. And then from there, she also created the website called nonclinicaldoctors.com. And on there, basically an extension of the book, but on there, you're going to find online support. You're going to find success stories of different doctors doing alternative careers and different job openings on working outside the box. Now, I'm having her on the show to kind of talk about her entry into living her life outside the box and basically talking to us about how different things were in the early 2000s. That's when she started her transition into, you know, outside of traditional realms of medicine. So we're going to learn more about her background, what led her on this journey, and ultimately how she's been able to succeed. Now, things that I want you to pick up on this episode are her advice really to the young doctors who are listening to this show, particularly the young doctors who've just recently graduated and are either out of residency or getting towards the end of residency and are starting to think about doing something non-traditional. She's got some really good advice for you all thinking about doing that. We're going to hear about why she also decided to write her book. Now, I know everybody, or at least most people, have heard of the SEEK conference. That's the conference where you can learn about different career paths for doctors. But she's going to talk about her experience attending as well as speaking at this conference. She's also going to give some more advice to all of you doctors looking to write for different electronic media outlets. She's going to give some good advice on that. And then obviously with all of my guests, all of my doctors who are on the show, she's going to answer hashtag I'm not just a doc. So on this one, definitely get your paper, get your pen, be ready to share this with someone who you know is trying to transition outside of traditional medicine. This is going to be a good one. And without further ado, I present Dr. Heidi Mawad. Dr. Heidi Mawad, thank you for joining us on Docs Outside the Box. What's up? What's good? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Really excited to have you on the show because oftentimes I think we talk about physician burnout. We talk about, you know, the thoughts of doing things outside of medicine, but never really offer, at least I haven't really gotten a chance to offer like really concrete ways in which docs can really start to take some of those steps. So I'm really excited to have you on because you've actually written a book about this as well as you have a website about this. So before we get so much into the nitty gritty, why don't we take a couple of steps back? Let's learn a little bit more about you, where you're from, what you currently practice, and learn a little bit about your road and your path to where you are right now.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I am a neurologist, and currently what I do is I'm a medical writer and editor. So I write content for websites, and I also edit content for websites. And the main reason, you know, like everybody else, the goal is to provide information for patients. So the path into that wasn't super easy. It's not very easy to get into that, but it does take some work and some patience and improving your skills. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely what I love. I also teach in the university setting. I teach undergraduate courses, which is really fun because that's also very neurology based. So
I think you teach anatomy, right?
I teach human physiology, but that's actually what I started doing. And now I actually teach writing classes. So I teach courses that are focused on scientific writing. I have one upcoming called The Biology of Creativity, which is a new one that I created. I got a grant to create that course. So really excited about that because it's also very neuro-based and students get very excited about cognitive and neuro function as well.
Now, where did you get your training from?
Oh, I trained at University of Chicago. I did my medical school at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. I did a general medicine internship at Evanston Hospital in Chicago and then my neurology at University of Chicago.
Now, are you currently located in Illinois?
I'm currently back in Cleveland. So back to my home.
Sorry about the Cleveland Cavaliers. You're lost with that.
Oh, yeah, that's a little heartbreak for sure. But, you know,
you knew that was coming, right? It was 3 years in the coming. You knew
it can be a touchy subject for us.
I understand. So look, let's change subject a little bit. Speaking of someone changing careers or changing team, what led you onto this path of, you know, writing for digital media, actually teaching anatomy and teaching physiology right now? What caused that fork in the road for you?
I think what initially caused it was really a feeling of wanting to know what goes on behind the scenes. So, you know, growing up, I was a child of immigrants and my father is a physician. Almost everybody we knew in our community is a physician. And you know, still as an immigrant, you sometimes feel like an outsider and, you know, who's in control of everything. So when I was working as a neurologist, I was getting these phone calls from insurance companies denying my studies, telling me I can't get this MRI on a patient. And I felt, you know, I had trained enough and I was knowledgeable enough. And who are these people second guessing me and telling me what to do? And so it really started from a desire to get behind the scenes and to be part of the club or whatever you want to call it of who's controlling things. Mm-hmm. And so I did get a job in utilization review. I did that for 7 years. It was awesome. And that company went through some changes and that ended. And then I started teaching mainly because that coincided with my kid's schedule.
Okay.
So it was just convenient for me to teach in college, but I loved it. Absolutely loved teaching, continued to do that. Have developed some really awesome and fun courses for students over the years. And then, you know, that same kind of nagging desire of who's in control of all this came up when I was seeing all the health information on the internet. And, you know, who wrote that was a big part of what I was thinking, you know, and maybe I could do a better job. And so that was really the drive for me to get into writing was, you know, trying to see, you know, who provides all this health information. And I know I can do it. I know I can do a good job. And I also really loved writing. So that started off real slowly, started off with a ton of applications, ton of rejections, ton of writing samples, sometimes doing things with an overwhelming amount of edits. And then gradually I just got better and better and I got asked to do more. And now I was promoted to being, you know, editing. So that takes some time to build that because it's very different from the training we had as physicians. But if you're really dedicated and you really want to do it, you can build your skills and you can get better and better to the point where people then reach out to you. So now I'm not doing all the applying anymore. Now people are reaching out to me through the contacts that I've made over the years and asking me to do this extra project or, you know, edit this or sometimes I do get contacted because of previous work and maybe an editor moved to a different company. And so it's those connections and networking over the years that helps with that.
How was that transition from full-time clinical neurology to, you know, doing utilization review? Did you struggle with that? Did you shift from doing one thing full-time completely to doing utilization review full-time, or was there a transition?
Hesitant. So I did both at the same time for, I think it was about 8 months before I left clinical medicine. And I know 8 months may not seem that long, but for me, I didn't really have the option to work a ton of hours for a very long period of time because my kids were young and I had a third one on the way. And at that point, I decided that I had to pick one and I picked the job that had the better lifestyle. Also, utilization review, for how unfair, you know, the economics of medicine is, it pays substantially more than clinical practice. And so it just was much more practical for me.
Okay, Dr. Heidi, were there any issues at work in terms of practicing clinically or any issues with colleagues that kind of, let's just say, I don't mean to use the word quote unquote force, but was there anything that kind of pushed you towards utilization review outside of social issues at home?
No, I mean, definitely, I was very happy as a neurologist. I love neurology, really liked my patients. I had a lot of respect for the colleagues in my department. It was the department where I had been a medical student when I came back to Cleveland after training. You know, those same professors who had taught me were my colleagues then. So no, it wasn't that I really, really wanted to leave. It was more that I just had this intense curiosity about what was going on behind the scenes. And I really wanted to be a part of it. And then, you know, just when I realized that the work was so much more practical and so much more flexible, and I was doing it from home and it paid more, as a mom of young kids, I felt like it was just kind of a no-brainer that I had to.
Does it really pay more than clinical medicine?
You know, at that time, it did.
Gotcha.
And I don't know about it anymore. I've seen some things on physician social media sites, and I think it's gone down a little bit, or maybe a lot, to be honest. But I think at that time, yeah, for sure. For sure at that time. I don't know what's going on now. And it was still very early. This was back in 2003. So
oh,
it was relatively early industry. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you one of my explanations for why I think it was so good at the time. I was the only female physician in that whole company. So it was basically older males who were extremely confident. And so I think I kind of got lucky and piggybacked off of their strong negotiating skills. And I don't know if it would be the same nowadays, but I was truly the only woman. So I think, you know, I got lucky. They sort of negotiated what they wanted and they had high expectations. And, you know, that was the environment back then.
So what led you beyond not only just, you know, shifting towards utilization review, but also deciding to write your book called Careers Beyond Clinical Medicine that right now is on Amazon, and then eventually switching and going and doing your website, nonclinicaldoctors.com?
Yeah, so that was really based on, you know, the work I was doing. Many of the doctors that I spoke to were very interested in finding out more. And they would ask me questions about it. And a lot of doctors asked me if I could get them a job in the company where I was working. And, you know, for various reasons, when you talk to a physician who wants to get out of medicine, I could tell for sure that for some people, the work I was doing was not going to be the right fit for them. Some of them might have been better doing research, or some of them might have been better in pharma or in a job that requires travel, you know, where that was not something I was willing to take on. I wasn't willing to take on travel and that kind of thing. So it just gave me this sense that I think the answer for each doctor is a little different. And so I decided to interview doctors who are doing all kinds of different things. So there are people who were chairmen, people who were working in pharma in research, people who were working more in the business side in pharma, people who were in leadership positions in insurance companies, which is not what I was doing. Utilization review is not a leadership position. There were people who started their own companies and people who were doing telemedicine back when it was still fairly new. And there was someone who started his own telemedicine company. So I interviewed these people to get their stories and to figure out, you know, how did they do it so that I could provide physicians a wider array of what they could do, because I didn't think what I was doing was right for everyone. And I'm also a neurologist, and neurology is a very expensive, you know, imaging. It's very expensive imaging. So neurology was more in demand in utilization review than, say, someone who's a rheumatologist who might be in high demand in a pharmaceutical company because they have a lot of, you know, immunosuppressive medications. So that was really my drive. And I felt like if I'm already getting all these people trying to ask me what to do, then there must be even more that I don't know and I need to provide this information.
Now, obviously, that's kind of like the similar theme with Docs Outside the Box. Like, yeah. Once I did locum tenens work and started seeing what other doctors were doing with, mm-hmm. you know, locum tenens and then doing what they were doing on the side, I was like, man, like, I probably would have done something differently, but I know I'm not the only person who feels this way and wants to know what's out there. So right. Kind of similar motivation there. Was there a common theme that you noticed among these physicians in terms of, you know, why they were in non-clinical fields?
Well, at that time, most of them were people who were doing very well clinically, but they had very small side projects that were non-clinical, often within their hospital system. Or if they were in private practice, they maybe worked with a supplier who was providing them with some equipment or something, but then they got super interested in the technology and improving the technology. So a lot of times the pathway in was through their clinical work. I mean, that was initially my first pathway in too. I mean, it was during my clinical work when I was getting rejected, my MRI requests were getting rejected, that I spoke with the person who was rejecting them and I proposed to him that I join the company. So that's really the easiest way. Now, after I wrote the book, I've changed directions in many ways. And I did the website. I started nonclinicaldoctors.com more as a response to all the emails I was getting from doctors who read the book. And their concerns were a little bit different. So the book is very helpful for a person who is practicing, has a license, has board certification, and is doing well clinically, has a strong reputation and wants to get out. But the emails I was getting were people who didn't match, people who had substance abuse issues and got kicked out, people who were burned out, or people who felt like they were going to develop substance abuse issues if they don't get out. People who were having conflicts with their colleagues. And so the website is much more like, okay, you need to get a job. You need to get a job now. And even if you're not super qualified, this is what you can do. You can click on these links. You can apply to these places. It's just taking a different turn.
And what I think I like about the website is you're giving actual tangible jobs that they can do as opposed to this nebulous. You can do other things outside of medicine. It's like, yeah, that's right. Great. But like, give me like a specific job duty that someone is doing. And I right. really like that about the site. So I'm sure you've been getting a ton of traffic to that site.
And now a word from our sponsor. Understanding how to run a business in medicine will put you at a unique advantage in the future. Whether it's leading a hospital, practice, or starting a new venture, the Physician CEO program will put you in focus from day one. Physician CEO is an accelerated business immersion program developed by MBA faculty from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. The Physician CEO program provides an intensive MBA-style education made up of modules, with each module covering topics from leadership to entrepreneurial ventures. Because of their individualized structure, each participant leaves the program with their 1, 3, and even 5-year business plan, all designed to function in the real world. If you're a physician who is looking to start your own venture, lead your practice or department, or even start planning for succession out of medicine, then you can't afford to miss this opportunity. Class is filling up. Learn more at www.physician-ceo.com/DOTB.
One thing I want to know is, okay, a lot of your transition was happening in the early 2000s. Can you compare and contrast the environment, the atmosphere that, let's just say, a doctor would feel or would, what was the atmosphere like saying that you wanted to transition into a non-clinical field back then? Compare it to right now. Like, have we reached a tipping point? Is it a lot easier now to say that, or is it just the same?
Oh, I think it's much easier to say that. I mean, I think that my leaving clinical medicine, many people looked at it as me not working at all, even though I was working at a job that where I was earning more than clinical medicine. But, you know, a lot of people just considered me a stay-at-home mom, which is fine. I mean, my own career satisfaction is what I cared about, not what people thought. And I think because I was so balanced and it did pay so well and it was so flexible, you know, my kids had the same advantage almost as having a stay-at-home mom because I was home and I didn't work too much and I didn't work weekends or take call or any of that kind of thing. But so I think the attitude back then was if you leave clinical medicine, you're just not working. you know, you've like fallen off the face of the planet. Where I think now people talk about it. And I mean, one of the big things that I push on my website is there's a career continuum. I mean, you make a commitment to be a doctor in your mid 20s or sooner than that for many of us, you know, if you got accepted into a program earlier.
You got into a program right out of high school, right?
Right out of high school.
A college accelerated program.
Right. Yeah. So you can make that commitment early, but then your career doesn't have to look the same for 50 years or 60 years. I mean, if we have energy, we'd like to continue to work for a long period of time. But I think there's a continuum and it doesn't have to be the same all the time. You know, I think it's great if it is. I mean, if you're a surgeon, you want to develop your skills and get better and better and better, then that's awesome. But I think you don't have to only follow that formula.
So let's do some scenarios then. Let's say, for example, you have someone in their mid-30s, they just finished residency and they got the reality check, you know, that what they thought and the zeal and everything, the naivete is that they thought that they had before going into medical school or through medical school is a lot different than what they are experiencing as a practicing clinician. And they are looking on your website or they're coming to you asking for help. Like, what are the things that you would say to someone who's looking to transition into a non-clinical role? What are the first couple of things that they should?
Well, first thing I would say is finish your residency, get your board certification, maintain your license so that no matter what you do, if you want to hop back in and moonlight, you can.
Definitely play the game first.
Yeah. I mean, if you have loans, even without loans, I mean, we all have big expenses, you know, you have to pay for your house and your life. And then of course, you know, if you haven't paid your loans back yet, I would say make sure you are able to qualify yourself so that you can do locums and moonlighting if all else fails, you know? So that's one thing I would say. And then I would say, you know, you're disenchanted, you hate it. That's what a lot of people say. They're disenchanted. It's not what they thought it was going to be. They have these administrators breathing down their necks, telling them they didn't document this thing. And they have a pile of, well, it's not a pile of physical charts anymore.
A huge inbox.
Yeah, a huge inbox that they have to fix all these patient charts. And that can really make you very depressed, especially when you spent time with that patient and your goal was to make the patient better. And then you got this annoying trail of emails telling you you didn't finish the documentation or you really had a plan to get an imaging test or write a prescription and it's denied by someone. You don't know who that someone is. So all these things make people very depressed. And you know, the first thing I would say to anyone is think about, is a different practice setting better for you?
So rather than jumping out, like a change of location, maybe.
Yeah. And then this is another thing that I really have a strong theme in a lot of the blogs I write for various publications, but also on my own website, is know what you want. Do not send an email or a letter or anything to some recruiter saying, I will do anything. I will write. I will give you advice. I will read charts. I will do anything you want.
I read one of your blog posts that said that. Why do you say not to do that?
I just don't think anyone wants to hire someone with that attitude because that's basically just rescuing you. And if they do hire you, they're going to offer you a very, very low salary because you don't know what you want.
I get it.
You're not interested in building anything. I mean, if you can say, and I mean, I know it's not easy to break into being a podcaster. I mean, think about all the work you had to do. But if you at least even say something like that, I want to get into media, then you have some sense of direction. And then do your homework. Find out what that industry is about. Find out what the companies are that are hiring for that industry. And spend time on their websites looking at their identity and what they value so that you can position yourself better. And I'm not saying lie. What I'm saying is if you find out their identity and what they value is so different from you, then just stay away from that and pivot.
Okay, so my next question then would be, what if you have a doctor who is, they enjoy the clinical practice, but they just kind of would like to do some other things. Like, how do they figure out what they want to do? How do they figure out what's out there? Because I know you mentioned, and that's a really good point, if you're going to inquire about or try to look for a job, you should really know what you want to do. But what if you're that step before? How do you figure out, you know, what's the next step?
So I think a lot of people, and I go to SEEK, you know, the SEEK conference.
I want to get your opinion on that conference too.
I speak to a lot of physicians and some people really don't want to leave, but you know, some people, what they really want is to just have a seat at the table And so what I tell them is, you know, maybe you need to be on an advisory committee. You know, keep your clinical practice and be on an advisory committee for pharma or something like that. And then see if that's something you really like. You know, they pay quite a bit for physicians to be on an advisory committee. And this is something that helps companies as they're developing their products. And so I suggest to doctors to do that. I actually had a few emails recently and a few people that I've met where I have a page on my website and I tell them to just send a letter to every single one of these companies. They're called medical writing and strategy companies. They sometimes do writing and projects for pharma and other medical device companies to help them just get their writing together. And what they do often is they'll get like an advisory committee from physicians. They put a bunch of people together and they interview them basically to help give information back to the pharma companies. And sometimes the pharma companies do this themselves, but that's a way to kind of get your feet wet and really decide if that's the right environment for you without having to leave clinical medicine.
Okay, Dr. Heidi. So what you just said was really great. I really appreciate that. Can you give us some really cool, successful stories? Any interesting stories or anecdotes that you have of doctors who are doing really cool things outside of clinical medicine?
Yeah, so it depends on what you consider very cool. Some doctors really like to leave clinical medicine and stay employed. Okay, that means get another job. Whereas other doctors like to leave clinical medicine and start their whole new project on their own. So I have seen doctors who have become fashion designers, started art galleries. I've seen doctors who have worked in producing technology for medical purposes and started their own companies that way. In some instances, I know that doctors have gone to talk to venture capitalists to get money to start a very expensive product. So we don't all have the same tolerance for that type of uncertainty. I really can't imagine myself doing something like that, where if I had a project that was going to cost, you know, $10 million, I would go and get investors. But I think if you're really, really confident about what you're doing and you're very passionate about it and you've thought about it for years and you have this prototype, then you're willing to go and do that. Whereas other doctors like to start off very small, make a little profit first, and then reinvest it into their company and grow slowly. And then again, everything I've done has really been paid by another company, except for my website. I haven't really started any business myself. So there's different ways to do it, depending on what you're passionate about and also the tolerance you have for uncertainty and investing a huge amount of money into a project.
Yeah, definitely a lot more unknown than the kind of safe, you know, kind of already trailblazed path of medicine already. You mentioned before that you speak at SEEK Conference. I know everybody knows about the SEEK Conference. People have gone. Can you tell us about the SEEK Conference, what it is, how people can find more information? Just overall, like, what are your thoughts on it? Like, what can you learn from going to this conference?
Sure. So it was a conference that I had thought about. I don't remember when it started, but someone that I befriended on LinkedIn, Michelle Mudge Riley, she's one of the...
Oh, yes. She was a previous guest on the show. Yeah.
So she's one of the seasoned coaches, okay? She's a coach that helps get people out of clinical medicine. She's been doing it for a long time. And I connected with her, and I also connected with Heather Fork. And I think that they suggested me as a speaker some years ago. And so I was invited as a speaker, and I really, really enjoyed it. And the things that I heard from physicians just really opened my eyes. As I said, kind of like my emails, it opened my eyes to the different personal concerns that people have. And you can sort of get in your own bubble. You know, when I was writing my book, it was almost like everybody I knew was sort of like me. They were all physicians and doing well and didn't have any kind of problems with colleagues or licensing, because everybody I knew was people I knew from work. But once you meet other people, it opens your eyes. And in some ways, it's sort of like neurology for me. I mean, you know, when you're a neurologist, you're doing something for people who are really suffering from the most difficult medical conditions. And when you talk to doctors who are really in a bind, who really are having trouble, it just evokes a certain type of sympathy. And you want to do what you can to find the right resources. And that's a big drive for my website. When I talk to people who are really, you know, these are physicians, and I really want to give them the right resources so they can work and make a living and be proud of what they're doing. Even if they didn't match, or if they got bad board scores, or if they, you know, had a problem. Sometimes people get sick, have disability, all these kinds of things. Oh, so back to Seek. I had heard about it a long time ago, thought about going, but I thought it was kind of expensive, thought I could do it myself, did the transition myself, didn't go to Seek. I had a friend who told me she went to Seek and loved it. He ended up getting a really cool job as a medical director. She said Seek didn't help her find that job, but they helped her figure out how to propose this position and how to negotiate.
Oh, okay.
Not like a personal one-on-one help, but more just all the talks she went to and all of this kind of information. She made it more relevant to her own personal situation, if that makes any sense. And then I was invited to speak and loved it.
What do you speak on?
So the first time I went, I've only gone twice. The first time they asked me to speak about writing and teaching. And the second time they asked me to speak about teaching. They thought that the two subjects needed to be separated. And I think more people are writing, so it's a little easier for them to find someone to talk about writing. But teaching at the college level is what I spoke about.
Now, writing, medical writing or writing for, currently right now you're an author for many different media, including MD News. Can you offer some advice for someone out there who's listening right now and saying, hey, I want to do something like that? What are the pros? What are the cons that people need to, you know, be cognizant of before they jump into that?
I would say you have to start off proving that you can write. So for me, my book was sort of my validation. That was almost like my CV sample. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that kind of thing, you need to start off, I would say, by contributing articles to blogs, websites for free. I mean, there's so many doctors who want to write. It's overwhelming. And you have to be willing to distinguish yourself by showing something. You have to have a portfolio of, I would say, at least 3 to 10 well-written articles. And, you know, my suggestion would be to write about things. You know, if you were starting to put a portfolio together, you want to write some blogs and have something you can share. I would write something for patients that's really, really general. Okay. So I talked to an OBGYN and, you know, I gave him a suggestion of like, you know, when should people freeze their eggs? That kind of thing. Just something that a lot of people might be interested in. And then also maybe something kind of obscure to show that you can communicate something very complicated in a way that's not intimidating. Okay. And then I would say write something also to a physician audience, because that also shows that you're professional. And so I would say if you at least have those three categories, then my suggestion, well, there's a few good websites, but the two that I found that were pretty useful, LinkedIn, obviously everyone knows about that. You can apply, you could look up medical writer and see what the openings are and apply and send your samples. You could put your links in your CV. And another one, it costs money, but a friend told me about it some years ago. It's called flexjobs.com. And I get nothing out of this. I'm not affiliated with them at all, but they also have some really good jobs for writing as well. And so I would say just, you know, look and apply and apply and apply. And, you know, if you're luckier than me, maybe you'll get some great responses right away. I got tons and tons of rejections when I first started. So don't let that discourage you.
So Dr. Heidi, we're getting towards the end of the interview. This is now time for a fast fire questions. Just let me know what's on the top of your head when I ask these questions. You game?
Sure.
Okay. So if we can parse down this interview just to kind of one topic, one idea, what's one thing that you want the audience to take from this podcast?
I would say the one thing is do what you love. Don't be afraid to do what you love, but maintain some securities. Keep your license, keep your board certification. Don't give those things up.
I love it. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you have given to yourself as a pre-med?
You know what I would have said as a pre-med? I would have said, don't be afraid to do a writing internship or ask about these kinds of things. See if there's a way that I could do something in the media and have a formal training as a physician.
You know, there's these like medical journalism internships that are like popping up all over the place that I'm just saying to myself, if I had known about these things when I was a resident or even a medical student, I would have jumped all over these things.
Yeah, I think I would have too. I don't think they existed when I was a student.
Man, talk about jealousy. Right.
Yeah.
Let's move on then. What's a personal habit that has helped you become more successful or even just a doc outside the box?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think the personal habit is I'm not afraid of criticism.
That's a good one.
And when you do something where you write and you have your name associated with things, you know, sometimes I've seen some of the comments, they can be really critical. And it doesn't bother me. So I had to get over that hump. Once I got over that hump, I was fine.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so I don't know if you do or not, but this is something that I think is really interesting. If there's someone who you find inspirational, there's someone who you think is famous, is there anybody who is inspirational, anybody who you admire, anybody who is famous that you would be interested in trading places for 24 hours?
Oh gosh, I don't know about trading places, but I was definitely inspired a lot by the writing of Oliver Sacks. He's a neurologist who wrote a lot of semi-fiction, non-fiction kind of novels. And there was a movie based on one of his novels. So I think
really? Just kind
of, yeah, Awakenings.
Oh, that was based on, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I think I really always wanted to be a writer. Just knowing that in the back of my mind, even when I was a resident, kind of made me feel like that might happen one day, that maybe I would write one day.
I love it. I love it. All right. How about this? What's one life hack or even a piece of technology that you use that makes your life easier?
Okay. Yeah. So I'd like to get even better at this. But one of the things I do is I have this within my to-do list. I will start writing articles when I'm in the fitting room with my kids at the store.
So you take advantage of all the time that you have.
Every minute. So in the grocery store line, in the fitting room, and then I email them to myself and I put them on a Word document. I fix them up and make them look a lot better. But I would say sometimes I even do research on PubMed on my phone. So I think just really trying to utilize my phone as much as I can. One thing I really want to do is learn how to dictate better, but I still need to learn how to do that.
Well, I think also the software is better, you know, obviously than earlier, but even from a charting standpoint, definitely from an EMR standpoint, dictation is still very painful for me also. And I podcast. Okay. Don't put too much blame on yourself. I think it's definitely a technology issue also. So look, Dr. Heidi Mouad, we are at the end of our interview. I want you to complete this sentence for me, okay? I'm not just a doc,
I am a person who provides medical information to help people live their lives.
I love it. You cleaned it up at the end. I love it. Awesome. Well, Dr. Heidi Mouad, really want to say thank you very much for being on Docs Outside the Box. Truly, you are a doc outside the box. I think there's one thing to say about, you know, going through a transition and finding your way at the end and being very successful. But there's another thing to being able to take all that knowledge and help other people who are going through the same process also. So I just wanted to acknowledge you for the good work that you're putting out there, positive energy that you're doing. And I just want to say kudos to what you're doing and great job.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for having me.